Thank you. The chairperson of the portfolio committee, Honorable Kangetwa, the members of the portfolio committee of Actuary Coctor. Chairperson of CRL, DG and other senior officials that are actually here. My fellow board members, as well as the staff of the demarcation board. Chairperson, once again, as the board, it gives us pleasure to actually come and report to you in terms as to where we are in terms of our programs. As usual, we see this really as an opportunity not just purely to actually account, but also we have always and genuinely saw this forum as a source of actually advice and guidance just in terms as to what we do as the board. Chairperson, I'm not going to be long, but I thought I should just highlight three key developments, at least at my level, that I thought maybe you would like to take note of, the details of which some, at least, will be elaborated when the CEO does make a presentation. But I think from the level of the board, I'd like to say that in terms of our core mandate, as you may recall, when we last had a discussion in terms of our strategy, we were in the middle of what we call a stakeholder consultative process. That is a step that normally precedes the legal process in terms of the determination and redetermination of the municipal boundaries. I want to announce that as the board, we have now completed that process. We are now on the verge of actually now coming with a legal process where we now would formally send out notices where we now actually indicate our intention to change boundaries or review boundaries of certain municipalities. And this change, Chairperson, would actually range, members here, would really range from just minor boundary realignment, consolidation, but there are some that will be quite significant in terms of changes, and that may involve amalgamation, and in some instances, if indeed such a decision is being made, recategorization of certain municipalities. I would also like to, the second thing that I thought I must actually highlight that has actually happened during the period under review is the fact that the board has now resumed with the assessment of the capacities. As a matter of fact, the board has now completed that process, and we've just relaunched the report on the municipal capacity assessment last week, and we will be doing so annually as we have done it before. You recall that when we were here last time, we did say that we temporarily halted the whole process and purely to actually improve the usability as well as the utility of that report, but again to actually ensure that report and it's able to appeal to a much more wider audience other than its primarily audience, which were the MECs for local government. We would certainly be giving a flavor of that, and the deputy chair of the board, Nondumiso Gwai, was really leading that part of the work, and she would briefly talk to it once we have actually done with our core purpose here. But I think it is something that I'm sure, as a committee, you certainly would like to actually have a session where it could present it, to you. The last thing from my side that I thought I must highlight, Chairperson and the honourable members of the committee, is the fact that as the board, during the period under review, we have had a resignation that actually brings the the number of the board, our total complement, to about 8. It's still above the threshold in terms of how it operates. I mean, the Act says the board must be the minimum of 7 and a maximum of 10. We have already brought that to the attention of the of the ministry, and in terms of the Section 8 of our Act, if the ministry so decides to fill those vacancies, they need to follow, you know, that process. But that resignation was you know, for the board member which we assigned to Housing, you know, board member, you know, Linnell John. But I'm also pleased to say that we were, during the period under review, also been able to actually make an appointment of the new CEO of the board. And and as I've actually, you know, indicated, is that the CEO really started in August. And I want to, at this stage, thank really our partners and the committee in particular in assisting us, you know, in that regard. As a matter of fact, Chair, I think to me, the our process in the search and the ultimate appointment of the CEO really indicated the kind of collaboration that our associate, you know, organization like SALGA, as well as the committee, you know, that was to me a good and a practical example of collaboration in actual action. And in this regard, I'd like to thank the committee, and in particular, Inkosi Uzwelile Mandela, for her role in terms of sitting, you know, in the panel throughout, you know, those whole sessions. And you would see, Chairperson, whether we have made a mistake or we have done a good decision when the person in question will be making the, you know, the presentation before this committee. So with those few words, Chairperson, I would like the CEO of the board, Ms. Kabusile Gumbi Masilela, to actually take us through the highlights of our annual report. Thank you.
Indeed, Chairperson, our mandate as a portfolio committee, we are very strong at doing evaluation assessment. We can start our assessment, CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members of the board and colleagues. Chairperson, I'm not sure whether I should say this or not. When I walked into the department, the CFO was running away, and she hasn't looked back. So I'm not sure what they do to people there. So if I ran away the next time you call us here, you must know there's something wrong. Either the people they employ you or the board that make you run away. But thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. We're just going to take, and I'm not sure how much time you're giving us, Chairperson, but you'll be guided by yourself. We just thought that we'll take you through our vision, the background, the process and the timelines, the audit outcome, the periods of public participation. I think the Chair has just touched briefly on that one. Highlights in our annual reports, medium-term expenditure framework and the challenges thereof, the strategic direction that the board undertook in July, and just to give you a sense of where the board and its strategic draft is going. The vision of the board, I think, has been shared with the committee, but effectively it's just a full realization of the constitutional and local democracy in South Africa through functional and viable municipality. I think it supports the previous presentation by SALGA, who is our key stakeholder. The annual report, Chairperson, is tabled in the background of the mid-term tenure of the board. And I think what they wanted to outline in the annual report is all the work that has been done by the board from the time they took office in 2009 to this point. So a number of activities that have been undertaken, as you would know, that our activities are not annual activities. They actually straddle through particular periods. It presents some of the achievements and highlights of the board in the end review. The major highlight has been the review of the municipal assessment team as the assessment tool. As the Chairperson has already said, there was a 2-year lull when a review of the capacity assessment was done by the board, it indicated some of the areas or the gaps that needed to be dealt with and some of the weaknesses. And I must say, Chairperson and the members, that the board is quite comfortable with the methodology. We think it's improved. We think it's going to provide much more information in a different variety of ways that people work comparatively in different sizes of municipalities. But it just provides the just in term. We look at it as a baseline data, because it happened just as this term of the municipal term is in the process, and we're going to then be able to look at the trends over time until the next 2016 election. The nine pilot areas that were done were quite pointing in terms of the rural-urban divide. I don't know if you were talking about earlier now about the towns and no villages or townships. I think it points into the challenges that I experienced in those. The chief touched a bit on this one, that in the last quarter of the year, we published circular one of 2011 and circular one of 2012 to kickstart the outer boundary process for the board. This was followed by circular two of 2012, where an elaboration and a differentiation of the risk determination was outlined. As you said, there are three types, this is A, B, and C, and they differ in terms of the extent to which the redemarcation of the boundaries is implemented. And during this process, the board received approximately 1,000 proposals from across the different cross-section of the stakeholders, and all types of boundary changes have been requested. It is anticipated, therefore, that the outcomes of this proposal will include, among others, the realignment and readjustment of boundaries. There's been a request from STEP South Africa and the Surveyor General that we link and align it to the cadastral boundaries, either the road, either the river, so that it also assists South Africa when they do their census to know where the boundaries end, but it's a clearly aligned boundary. There's also going to be consolidation of certain types of municipal areas, and thirdly, there will be measures in transformation. The first one is very minor. We call it a technical adjustment. The second one is a combination of whatever, but I think we've been mindful of the fact that we have to apply our minds effectively, especially where people's lives are going to be affected, that the extensive public participation process is involved or engaged with the people that are going to be affected, and I think we'll talk about that at a later point. And we're also saying that this process in some cases will result in the recategorization of certain municipalities in the country. Just to remind the members of the processes and the time frame, the period between 2011 and 2013 is the period where we redetermine the municipal boundaries. We are in this process, which, as the chair was saying, we are getting into the legal process now, and that process is going to take us to about January, February next year. From that particular point, therefore, we will be handing over some of the functions and activities to the IEC in preparation of their own work. And from 2013, around June or so, to 2015, we're going to be delimiting the wards in preparation for the 2016 local government election. I'm sure when we come out here with the confirmation that the local government election is still going to be in 2016, not in 2014, we think we are on schedule and we are on target in terms of what we're doing right now. The public participation, Chairperson, has been one of the areas that has been a bone of contention for the board. And I think the board took time during the strategic planning session to look at how they can do and how they can enhance the public participation process. Clearly, the legislation say that the board may engage, consult, but the board believes that we have to consult, we have to engage people that are affected so that they become part of the decision making process. In this regard, the board has actually assigned each member of the board to a particular province. So so that it escalates the participation, the consultation, and they can deal with high-level issues where there are high-level issues, basically, even if the political issues, even if there are issues that deal with MECs, mayors, speakers, and those kinds of levels. In terms of our framework, we have periods for public participation where we provide information, as much information as possible about the process, the criteria, and how the process would unfold. Meetings that we hold are per district area, and those meetings took place in the main between August and September. Board members have been all over the place, all over the country, having meetings, series of meetings, sometimes at the invitation of the MEC, sometimes at the invitation of municipalities, but in some cases at the invitation of normal community members. And they've been to those meetings, engaged extensively with stakeholders. The deadline for new requests for this was 15 December 2011, after the process started immediately after the elections in 2011. There were further visits during the course of this year. Section 26 submissions were received between April and May 2012. Further public meetings were engaged with up to September, October this year. The Section 21 objections, we anticipate them to happen between August and 2012 and January 2013. We are going to be publishing the Section 26 notices, the intention to redemarcate or the intention to readjust the boundaries would go out at the end of this month. And in terms of the legislation, the period for the comments or in that process is 30 days. So we're looking at the end of this month up to the end of November, we'll be looking at that period we call the legal process. The municipalities and affected communities are encouraged to participate as much as possible. We're working with colleagues from DCOC to make sure that we enhance participation, but also with the other structures that would assist us to enhance public participation. We also use the public medium, such as radios and papers, to make sure that the participation and consultation is extensive. The circulars are all in the website. We are working on a website, but the information is still available when you open the website, because we haven't fidgeted with the website. We're working on it on the site, so the information continues to be there. So any information anybody needs is still in the website. The highlights of our annual report basically looks at the progress that we've made in terms of all the circulars and the visits to municipalities. There has been engagement with the mayors, engagements with different stakeholders. Some political parties have requested meetings, so there has been extensive engagement with a whole range of stakeholders. As I said, there are three types of determinations. They're from minor to quite major adjustments. We're happy that the new capacity model was finalized and implemented. We have a document which circulated the report of the state of municipal capacity to yourselves, which was launched last week. We're hoping that we can engage further with all the key sector stakeholders on the outcome of this report. The review of the functioning of the board led to a major organizational structure to ensure that the board is properly positioned to deliver on its mandate. However, there are certain challenges we'll talk about. We also insist that we remain focused on good governance as a cornerstone of our board. And I think we are working, and out of the strategic plan in July, those are some of the fundamentals that we came up with. In terms of our financial summary of our financial results, our total income for the period in review was 39.1 million. The expenditures during the period was 36 million, resulting in a surplus of 3.3 million. Members would recall that this was as a result of the process where we're still reviewing the municipal capacity assessment tool and getting into the process of getting the new one in place. The expenditure variance, therefore, was 3.5 million. The projections is that the board has spent within the budget, and the current ratio is 6.1. We have an accumulated surplus over the years of 20.2 million. We've written to both DCOG and National Treasury, applying for the reassignment or reallocation of the surplus, which was accumulated as a result of the period where we did not do the capacity assessment. We have commitments currently of 5.2 million that are hinging on that surplus that we would actually look forward. And we're happy that the DG is here, is listening. He would assist us to get that approval from National Treasury. We've had a long engagement before he was here, and they were toing and froing, but we keep pushing. Chairperson, you would know that Treasury has indicated that they are going to be applying cuts to the budget in the next MTEF period. Our original MTEF budget was for the period ending March 2012, 38.4 million. The other income that we have from selling maps and other activities came to 641,000 rand. So the total income at our disposal was 39.1, as we said. In terms of the breakdown of that, we got a grant from government of 38.4. We have other we had anticipated to get additional income from our sale of maps and other issues of about 857, but we ended up with 641. So we had an expenditure therefore of 35.8, and 3.3 was the under expenditure within the norm. Everything, the two slides, I think I'm just going to jump this one. It says the same thing as the other one. What happened to my slide now? We just wanted to explain the process here. The goods and services took 50% of our budget. Clearly, the goods and services catered for every line item. Our employee costs are 31, and members would know that we only have 26 full-time staff in the MDB. And we also have some interns that we are training in the organization. 2% went into the audit fees, 3% into the depreciating and amortization, and the total expenditure was 92%. Loss on sale of assets, 0%. We had a projected 1%, and we had about 100,000, and we didn't spend anything on that one. So the surplus itself is 8%. We had an unqualified, we were hoping for a clean audit. I think that's where, that those were the terms of the board, to have a clean audit, but we ended up with an unqualified report with emphasis of matter. The emphasis of matter, we are around a regular expenditure of about 600,000. In explaining that is in the process of the new CFO who came for a year, she was looking at the system and cleaning up the system, and in the process came up some of the challenges, and those basically happened during the period where there was no CFO or supply chain management staff. So some of the wheels came off in the process. It was not necessarily mismanagement, but just non-compliance with SCM procedures. This became a regular expenditure through the contravention of PPFA, as the audit report points out. And the other problem that also created this was poor filing system, because as the Auditor General was looking for some of the files, those files were not available due to poor filing. We're improving on that filing system as part of the recommendations of the Auditor General. In the medium term framework between 2012 and 2015, we're projected to have 128 million rand as our MTF allocation. But as I said, that we're anticipating that 5% increase is going to position us to be able to deal with some of the decisions that were taken by the board in July. However, in line with the Treasury requirements, we have to do our 1% cut on our budget the next financial year, 3% the other year, and 4% in the outer year. That significantly reduces our budget, which means the strategic decisions, some of the strategic decisions that the board took to during July may not be implemented if we experience this cut in our budget, because part of it was going to Treasury and to DCOP and requesting additional funding to finance some of those strategic objectives that we came up with. This is our budget originally as we anticipated. We thought it would work, but now it's going to be less than what we have now. Because in terms of what we have, there are general complaints about the sales of maps to municipalities, who are our biggest clients in terms of the maps, because they need the maps and our maps are reliable. We're negotiating that process, but it's one of our revenue generation stream. We're going to have to cut in the goods and service, and my board is going to kill me, because they have still have to consider the areas that we need to. We have to cut on some of the fundamentals, but some of the areas that it's going to be much, I don't know whether to say easy or whatever, areas such as conferencing, cut down on meetings, cut down on travel, or five different mechanisms of travel. We're looking at different options and variations that we still need to negotiate and agree with the board. The other expenses, basically, we cannot reduce on that one. Our expense on capacity assessment is going to stay as we basically ensure that report is sustainable, and as we continue to analyze some of the areas that came up sharply in the report. The next slide basically deals with the whole range of issues, but in terms of our goods and services, those are some of the areas where we think we would be forced to cut to get the 1%, 3%, and 4% as required by the difficulty that we have on publication notices in Gazette, on communications, clearly radio communications is quite expensive. We're exploring getting the community radio stations, which are much more cheaper, but the mainstream radio stations are another alternative avenue that we can look at. Instead of using your general papers, the Sunday Times, we're looking at the cheaper, free local newspapers. But also there will be travel, because we'll still need to travel to some of the areas to make sure that the consultation is quite extensive. But we have limited areas where we're going to be forced to make those cuts when we do make those cuts. In terms of we had projected to increase our activities. One of the areas that we've just created as an area of significance in the board is the area of research. We believe that some of the decisions that the board make requires some background of research in terms of where there's major changes in the boundaries. There's going to be some research that is made, why there has to be a metro, why this boundary has to move, why this municipality has to be consolidated and integrated with the other one. We're going to be supporting that with intensive research. So we've developed or we have created a research unit in the board for knowledge management and information management internally. Also for organizational memory, we want to set up a unit, even though we might not have all the capacity, and with the current scenario where we're going to have more cuts than increase in our budget, it doesn't seem like we're going to have the capacity that's required to do the research in other areas. In terms of our strategic direction, we had come up with six themes. The one was the determination, the rigid determination of municipal boundaries and categorization and recategorization of municipality with our key or our core mandate. The second one was the assessment of municipal capacity, metropolitan, district, and local municipality. You recall that in the previous round, it was only the district and local municipalities that we assessed. We've now added the metro. That makes the comparison much more richer and much more strategic. The third one is ensuring the board is supported by effective and efficient and effective organizational processes, systems, and practices, including human resources, which are some of the key areas of challenges that we're having. We had gone with the request for additional funding precisely to support this third theme around getting enough human resources, enough systems and processes in place to make sure that we function like a well-oiled machine. As I said, that good governance is the cornerstone of our board. We also want to make sure that we continue to have sound financial management. We have a target that the board has set that this year we have to get a clean audit. I think the question has been asked before. The sixth one is the one that is another core area that we thought we need to enhance significantly, the improvement and enhancing the stakeholder relations, the consultation, the communication with the key stakeholders, whether affected or not affected, but just the profiling of the board differently so that people understand what we do. The allocations, therefore, are in the next slide of each of the themes. We're going to have to make some cuts, as I've indicated previously. We would have managed or barely managed with the original allocation, but the cuts, therefore, would have to cut on some of the newer additions. The developments at the board post the strategic planning of July. One key focus area emphasized by the board is public participation. As we outlined the process, we're going to be working with the key stakeholders to make sure that the consultation process and the public participation becomes one of the cornerstones of the MDP work. We had done a thorough reflection and revisited and endorsed the process where board members are very involved in the process of consultation. We also looked at the process where we escalate our engagement in other areas of our operations, including travel around the country, which is what has been happening because consultation basically was the breadth and the length of the country. We went to some communities as far as Dordrecht. One of the committee members said comes from the Eastern Cape. We know some of the deeper rural areas now because we've been there. Stakeholder management unit is not up and running, but we anticipate that is the unit that's going to develop the strategy and make sure that we engage meaningfully and that there are various ways of engaging with the stakeholders. Profiling the work of the board, we also believe that we need some good profile, turn around the profile of the board. There's a lot of misunderstanding of the work of the board. We're going to partner with DCOG to drive the public participation using the machinery that they have in the provinces and the speaker's offices. The outreach is going to continue. We also believe that the board is going to play a meaningful role in policy debates and creating efficiency at local government level, as it is indicated by the recent report that we've just tabled. The research and operations is not yet up and running, but we believe it is the key area that we require in the board to make sure that the work that we do is supported by empirical research and that it is well researched and well investigated. The new capacity assessment report will inform and support the policy decisions by MECs, as the chairperson was saying, determining the powers and functions. But also we need to review the legislative and policy mandate of the MDB beyond just the boundary and redetermination, but contributing meaningfully in creating efficiency in local government space. We had started that engagement with DCOG around the legislative and policy reviews, and we're going to continue that. Our challenges, I think, are immense. One, as I said, we have inadequate technical skills and capacity in the board, and therefore some of the work that we have to do, we have to outsource. We would like to do the bulk of the work internally, but we do not have sufficient staff or capacity to do that. We get asked why don't we have provincial presence, but you can't have a provincial presence with 26 people in the office only. We have inadequate funding to fund all the strategic imperatives identified by the board at the strategic planning session. The budget cuts in the next 3 years will further hamper the effective implementation of our strategy. The other issue that we have is that only one member of our board is full-time. All of them are part-time. So that also impedes on our ability to engage timelessly or at the time the stakeholders are available, because if the board member is held up somewhere, because he or she is not full-time with the board, then we have to accommodate that particular process. So it's making the machinery itself a bit sloppy, and we'd like the support of the committee to relook at whether or not we need a full-time board, or we can have other mechanisms of making sure that we get efficiency. good governance, we continue to enhance our good governance in the board. We have systems and then processes in place that are going to make sure that we work effectively, but we believe that if we can have a full-time board, that will also further enhance the efficiency of the board going forward. In terms of our concluding remarks, we remain focused on our mandate and key strategic thrusts outlined in the Constitution, legislation, and in the strategic plan. The board and staff have worked tirelessly to ensure levels of efficiency in the organization, as well as giving comfort to communities where there's going to be some adjustments. The board also continues to provide leadership and guidance to achieve efficiency in the organization, and the board is engaged with enhancing capacity of the organization at management level. We are currently looking for some of the senior management to make sure that the strategic areas that are identified by the board are well driven by people with the right skills and right efficiencies. I thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Madam CEO, for a mouthful and constructive report. Members, can we entertain questions, comments arising from the presentation? I recognize Honorable Machoba, followed by Honorable Nhome, followed by Honorable Mosimane, followed by Honorable Nkosi Mandela, followed by Honorable Wendy Nelson. Honorable.
Thanks, Chair. Mine won't be long. And now the pitch is here from Tiktokov. It goes direct to him now, this one. When we took your presentation, we said we have assigned members to provinces, members of them. But you know very well that those members are not full-time, with no resources. That's right. The second one, you mentioned that you want to concentrate on part of the participation, which needs the members to be hands on. Because before this was easy, when you said, because when you talk about the constitution, you were saying the board may not, but now it forces now that it may, not may not, now. Meaning that the budget is going to be a question mark now there. And then also, when you said that we are going to consult and all that. Lastly, on your challenges, you did mention that board members to be full-time is the key. Now we are having a chairperson who's full-time, the deputy chairperson is not full-time. To us as a politician and then the teacher, that's why it's coming to you. Now we will let now the official to do the web, not the board. When you come down, the people will question the very same board. Because the officials have got their own agenda, not the board. When we are able to go into specific, I know that. When the notion is going out to do something which was supposed to be done by the board is different. Because a board and then some board also bring them the employees is not the same. Because there's a political direction which the board must take there. That's why I was saying that the key issue is the full time of the board. I don't say all. Before it was questionable the MDB, because if you check the outer boundaries, even the inner boundaries, they were using helicopter to determine this means what must end here. But now that people they say no, how do you manage to say this municipality must end here? Well, we just checked the numbers. As we have said to us that maybe it's just in the river, which is separate. One quarter of a farm is forced to another municipality. A farm, somebody's farm, one portion forced to another. Of course, they were just using the helicopter. Now that
we have realized the stages that you don't use for the quota paper must be hands on. It wouldn't be wise if now to have one time or only one person and then full time. We challenges. We may say to tomorrow is this point is failing. Only for that it's ourselves. The special committee we are failing. These people are not the resource. And then we expect something more from them. That's all I'll share.
Thanks, Honorable Machoba, Honorable Bonhomme. I'm trying to pronounce the surname so that you'll be able to get to the system.
Madam Chair, I must say that it was a good report. It was nice and straightforward, and I compliment the CEO for that. And another thing I need to compliment this delegation is that compliance with the 50-50 representative agenda. I think you all look good, you know, not all thorns, couple of rows in between. Now, I just could. The concern I got was reading the Auditor General's report, it's page 46, it's item 19. The quotations were awarded to bidders who did not submit declaration. My concern is that it said bidders, so a number of people got away with it. What steps have been taken to rectify that and ensure that it never happens again? That's all.
Thank you, Honorable Honorable Mosimane.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for a very good report from our CEO. Clearly, it's a straight and forward report, but I've got only one concern from slide 24 under your challenges, where it indicated that inadequate internal skills and capacity of the organization, there is a lack to drive the strategy of the MPP. My question is, what action has been taken by the board to make sure that they capacitate those who do not have skills? Hence, when you look at your slide number 21 here, in terms of your development at MPP post strategic planning, one could ask yourself that from all the units which have been established here, why training and development unit is not established so that it can be able to capacitate those who do not have skills. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thanks, Chair. And also reiterate what my colleagues have said to congratulate the board and MTB for their comprehensive annual report, but also take the opportunity, Chair, to congratulate and welcome the new CEO, Mamu Kumbi, as we had engagements in the interviews that were held by the MTB. Chair, my questions, really, there's a number of issues I'd like to gain clarity on. Maybe to begin unpacking the vision of the board.
But you must remember, it's maiden. Your questions must be maiden.
Thank you. But the board is not maiden, so Mama Shango is the office to assist. And on the vision, Chair, I think the vision doesn't cover demarcation as broadly as we may come to understand it. It simply focuses on municipalities, and it then unpacks a lot of questions for one who tries to understand all these disputes that arise because of boundary issues. For example, myself and my neighboring chief in the area of Kaka had a dispute on our boundaries, and we seemingly had land affairs come in to point out where the boundaries were. And I was left puzzled as to whose role does it become. Is it land affairs or is it the MDB? So maybe we would like to gain clarity as to the stakeholders that MDB works with, and in coming down to those issues, if traditional authorities or traditional council territories are also to be demarcated. Are they demarcated by land affairs or by the MDB? And if it is, then by the MDB, why is it not included in their vision? I think it, I just want to gain clarity on that. But also, just to dwell further on that, the pronouncement by the Mthapo Commission and as well by the President, His Excellency Jacob Gedleyihlekisa Zuma, has been on the kingships, also leads me to ask what is the MDB doing in realignment and adjustment of boundaries in to enable us to identify where these kingdoms are, especially when we talk about rural municipalities, because then that is where we often find these kingdoms being located. There's been a consultative process that has been adhered to, and I'd like also to know, has it involved, since we are COGTA, I might repeat, has it involved the Department of Traditional Affairs, National House of Traditional Leaders, Provincial House of Traditional Leaders, and the local houses of traditional leaders in the region, as well as the traditional councils themselves, in ensuring that they are capacitated and understanding particularly the issues of demarcation in rural areas. And if I may bring you to slide 12, Chair, there's been expenses there that maybe because I'm not so clued up onto the financial aspect, I need to get clarity. Administrative expenses, which come up to 26%. Employee benefits, 31%. Would that be the correct assumption that administrative and employee benefits talks to the staff at MDB, and then that talks then to 57% being consumed internally within the staff? If you can just give me clarity on that. Slide 13, Chair, talks to irregular expenditure, 627,675 rands. What has happened to those funds? Did I perhaps buy myself a Lexus, or did it somewhat go into buying other items? And maybe we can just look into the slide 16, which goes to detail as to what monies are used for what. So why aren't we getting a proper accounting of what this money has done? So I would really like and appreciate the proper breakdown of those funds, rather than being informed that the files have disappeared, and I think it will just give us a proper understanding as to what has happened to those funds. Slide 19 talks to boundary determinations of about 6.7 million, Chair. And again, if we are locating so much funds to boundary determinations, and it is also something that it's administered by Land Affairs through the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, and we're duplicating processes, if they can assist us in gaining clarity on that. So maybe there are funds that could be saved. And lastly, Chair, if SALGA and the municipalities in general, or the National House of Traditional Leaders and the Provincial House of Traditional Leaders are regarded as a stakeholder, why do we need presence in all provinces? Previously, I've alluded to this issue of integrating our systems to ensure that we render services to our people by ensuring that within municipalities, maybe the MDB can be able to train an individual so that we do have presence, or utilize the house, the Provincial House of Traditional Leaders, to ensure in the province there is someone that is positioned there for the MDB. So I would like to gain an understanding on that one then, Chair. What is an integrated system approach that is envisioned by MDB? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I think I'm just about covered with everything. Just one or two things. The filing system, has it been sorted out? I would presume that it's sorted out now that you've got a CFO and, in place. So just on that. And then the capacity assessment that has been done, what kind of study was this, Jeff? Was it on state SA? Was it a, you know, what kind of research methodology was used around that? And then the public participation process. I think since we arrived here, Chair, we've been talking of public participation with regard to the processes and the time frames. Because often, by the time people realize that boundaries are going to be delimited, the time frame was the whole process had already passed. So I think we want to acknowledge the efforts that has been made for the public participation process, but we would like to see it rolled down and right across the country so that it's publicized, people know what is happening, but we're very grateful for the strides that have been made, Chief. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Mussman.
Thank you, Chief. Page 4. Where it says that the circular 1, 2011, with application was submitted before the local election, and which follows by the circular 1 to 2012. My question is, how do the people from rural areas receive the circulars? Hence, they do not have what you call the Wi-Fi.
I also once again want to join members to appreciate and to congratulate the presentation. Chairperson, I also want to appreciate the fact in our last engagement of us. I think it's one of the entities that we used to have engagements with. That I've asked myself, saying that all these technical figures couldn't they be talked to us so that we'd be able to understand what is it that has been spent for. As a politician, I was not used. You remember my concern at that time, but I appreciate for the fact that from slide 16 and the like made a breakdown of what is it. From all the presentation, I think you are the only entity that you managed to make the committee understand on the breakdown. So if you are saying we've cut some other things, conferences, food, meetings, when reading, going through the report, we are able to see whether we are able to see, and for next time we'll be able even to compare with we are really have cut down on budget spending and to spare some other budget to do some other things. I know procedurally it's not the way of reporting if you compare it for maybe for Auditor General and the like, but when coming to the Portfolio Committee, I just want to appreciate the special arrangements that has been asked for the breakdown like this one, so that we'll be able to understand the issues and assessment. And as politicians, we are not familiar with the technical numbers and figures used to come and present before us. I also want to get into your public participation. It's for the second time. That one, you did not cooperate on that one. We always made mention of saying that you made use of some cheaper areas, or you use your local medias to do your public participation in informing, in taking the information down to the people. But I also made mention of our constituency offices. I know you made your strides in checking the machinery that is in provinces like speaker's offices. But constituency offices, there is no municipality that does not have a constituency office among the 9 provinces. In other municipalities, you find them in 4, 5. Like for an example, my constituency, it covers, I think, 8 towns, whereby you spend even no cent. Just ask the administrator to coordinate for your public participation, maybe to coordinate for the meetings you want to meet this and this stakeholder, through telephone, through hailing, they manage to do the work, which is mahala for you. I also urge that can you please make use of our constituency offices across the board, in all across the political parties. There are constituency offices. You can get the list of contact numbers of administrators. I think you'll be assisted in that regard. I just also want to, when responding, to touch a bit and saying you want to review your legislative mandate on accelerating public participation. I just want you to unpack that one. Thanks. I'll give over to you, Jefferson. And
no, thanks, Madam Chair and the Honourable Members. I think a number of questions have been raised. I would certainly would share this with my fellow board members. I would answer some, and I'm sure at some stage in terms of detail and clarity, particularly with regards to figures and numbers, the CEO may also come through them. Perhaps I think the question I'd like to deal with, which was raised, was the I think more to me was this concern that was has always been expressed about the capacity of the board and the manner in which it was structured, having one full-time member of the board who is a chairperson and all the 9 being part-time. It is something that we are engaging, and we would be engaging, firstly also with the department. I think Honorable Machowa is actually right that possibly maybe we need to engage with the department, because we're looking at the various options. One is having, for instance, 10 board members. Why don't you have 5 full-time board members? and maybe Sasabdin Bhatta's responsibility will be shared. Now, there's a history to that. I think initially when the board was started, it may have been a view that maybe its work was much more legal. That's why the board throughout its history has never lost any case. I'm actually quite surprised all the cases. And I think the board was very strong in terms of that. But I think it's something that this board will recognize it very soon over a time to say. To have, to have it's being compliant and actually being proper with the law, it's necessary but not sufficient, because we came to a conclusion that after 12 years, the people that are living in those areas are probably now are much, much, much better to be able to tell us whether the boundaries that were there are actually okay. We've always made the comment that as a board, we don't think we have a monopoly of knowing boundaries now, which basically meant even at all levels, different orientation and the skill set. I think that's where the point of skills comes in, where to say, rather knowing the mechanics and the theory of special configuration, you also must now embed with it a way of actually being able to engage, with the community. So it is something that I think obvious over time, it needs to be done with. So when we talk of skills, indeed, we're really talking around that, a different orientation and the skill sets that would actually, complement the current capabilities, that the board has. The helicopter, yes, it has been. I think, it is true, because I think you would see even in our previous presentation, what you normally found in various GIS and data does not necessarily reflect what is on the ground. So we endorse the whole idea that we need to have more people on the ground. And this issue, why we're raising it now in advance, it becomes particularly important, particularly when you come to the world boundaries, and I'll come to the issue of the constituency areas. So, just to emphasize is that we're looking at different orientation and actual way of doing things, more than, it's not so much as inadequate, but it is insufficient, skills. Now, the issue of the vision, Honourable Mandela, now when I look at it, I realize it's a bit opaque. In fact, it's not immediately obvious what is this institution. But I think would certainly have a look at that. But clearly, the issue of traditional areas, this even the word demarcation, I think most of what members would tell me, I just don't like it, because it's demarcation is an instrument towards achieving something. It's a way of doing things. So I was always joking and said this should be the Municipal Development Board, of which it uses demarcation to achieve that. But I mean, that's not the point for debate. It's demarcation. It's not something that is a preserve of the board. Something that we've got to actually discover. And this is something that we have also seen when we have address various traditional houses, because they raise issues of traditional boundaries. But in the scheme of things, what the board has happened in its early days, we collaborated with, by then, I think, the Constitutional Development and Justice to actually do the first round of the most authoritative traditional boundaries was actually driven by us. But it was a joint project. We're not able to sustain that, but it seems to us it's a matter that still lies outside the board. So we our mandate is really focused on the municipal boundaries. But again, it is something that I think perhaps when that review of the mandate of the board is done, we need to look at that, because indeed in terms of capabilities and skills, maybe the board may be better placed to do that, but it doesn't have a legal money to do so. Safe to say we can do that by way of collaboration with the other department, but currently we don't have really a mandate to demarcate traditional areas. Similarly, in the municipal boundaries. You know, we have, I think over the time, have actually said that, you know, when you do boundaries, particularly when the communities look at boundaries, they're not interested whether this is the mandate of the board and all that. They just simply see a boundary that is either it's an impediment, and in most cases, we've always been saying as a board, but we have stopped saying that, to say, look, when it comes to provincial boundaries, it's not us who should do that, it's a department. But I think it's one of those things that, you know, we must look at to say, rather than spending time to actually explain who has a mandate, we should find a mechanism of should do it. So I'm saying, yes, indeed, there should be some ways in which maybe all boundary-related matters, at least somewhat, you know, reside, you know, to one of those, and even if maybe they don't have a mandate, but they must have a role to do that. So it is something that I certainly would like to deposit it in one of the discussions that we'd actually have. So, and I think we would, notwithstanding what I've said, also start indeed engaging, you know, with the Ntlapo Commission. But for other reasons, I'm glad that you have raised this. Remember that even as a board, they said when we demarcate boundaries, we have to take into account the current, you know, traditional areas. So we need to understand what does the Ntlapo Commission says in terms of the current boundary. So on that level, we would actually, you know, make effort to actually engage, even, you know, with the office, you know, of the president in that regard. Lastly, maybe something that we have not mentioned, we've had quite a very successful engagement with the Hawa Traditional Leaders. As a matter of fact, I'm sure the deputy chair would elaborate on that. We were able to address the National House and all the other provincial houses. So I think to an extent that we have not been able to resolve whatever issues that they've raised, but they now know that there is a board. They now at least understand what it is. So there is, that channel, you know, has been open. Indeed, we take this comment as saying we must, you know, engage this. The issue of admin expenses, I think the other slides there does, you know, elaborate much more what is involved. But I think in the nature, you know, a board is a very small organization. You've got board, you've got determination, and you've got admin. So everything that seems to be not kind of board issues is there, but I think the CEO would actually kind of elaborate, but it's actually, you know, spelled out very well. I think the question about boundary determination and the possibility of actual, you know, duplication talks to the point that I've already said, because Mandela to say, I think we must all, maybe this committee must basically set land affairs, department, and say, just tell us who does what in the boundary issues. You know, maybe that's something that it will help, because I just feel inadequate for me to be able to, you know, to raise, you know, these issues. But I think they bother us, particularly, you know, the provincial boundaries. We talk about the filing system. I think the CEO would actually elaborate. But what has actually happened, I think, from where now I sit as a chair, sometimes small organizations, it's not maybe for bad intentions, but when key officials leave, I think it's got to do with the handover, whereby if a decision was made and the AG says, but can I see that letter, and then you there are new people. So I think it's more a question as to how do you actually, you know, ensure that things are filed properly. But I can assure you, Honourable Member Nelson, that that has been corrected, and we're looking at that clearly. The capacity assessment report, this is what the board used to do. The reason, in the legislation says, before the board can determine boundaries, it must assess the capacity of the municipality. So it has been doing that. Or when the MEC wants to allocate functions between districts, he must seek the views of the board, who must assess the capacity of board. So we've been doing that annual report every year. But that report every year from 2001 to 2008. But then from there, we decided to say, let's review this report. So I said it should make sense beyond the MECs. We have a report which I hope we have copies that we can share, that we have launched now, with that view in mind. Firstly, this one that we have actually done, it really used a methodology where it was electronic based, so a very huge database, but essentially it looks at all the capacities. We have grouped the functions according to what we think is technical, you know, logic, you know, those that belong together, and actually assess capacity. But what this one does, as I saw, has actually hinted, we have gone beyond just simply district. We have also dealt with actually metros. We have actually been able to, you've been able even the municipalities to look at the capacity and compare themselves, you know, with their peers. So it is something that that is a much more, you know, improvement, you know, than this. Public participation, and I think the deputy chair is one of the areas that she was paying attention and she would speak more. But structurally, yes, indeed, we are indeed getting ourselves to perform that function better. You'll see that what we have done now is to ensure that we institutionalize that, you know, within the board. Certainly, just in terms of reaching all the other areas, it is true that I think as a board we really rely, I think, on the municipalities to some extent and the district where we want to engage, you know, with the boundary changes, because by definition boundary changes do affect one or two municipalities. But I think we take a view that I think we need to go, you know, beyond that. We did actually indeed engage with the Office of the Speakers. What we will be doing, since this exercise is ongoing, will certainly, Madam Chair, now start looking at the constituency offices. And I know that the Chair would like to speak more about that, but I think it is something that we spoke with the IEC, for instance, because they've got what they call party liaison officers, where we address them every time. I think the next stage was for us to actually, you know, get this party license, you know, officers, I mean, to go, in other words, you know, to go, you know, the political parties, for instance, to actually now be able to assist us in going down to that level. But we needed to ensure that we take advantage of that party license structure of the IEC to actually engage what the port is done. We've been able to do that. So I think the next logical step would now to go to the consensus. And so I said, when we go there, we actually not been seen as actually partisan, but every other party is actually at par, you know, what we need to do. So I think we would be doing that. And I think I suspect I may have passed a few other questions, but I think if the deputy chair and maybe you could also speak to other issues and set on the regular expenditure as well.
Thank you very much, and honourable members. I just add to what the chairperson of the board has indicated, particularly on what the honourable member Mandela asked on service delivery alignment boundaries. You know, as much as we are not responsible for boundaries of traditional leaders, we traditional authority boundaries, we have in terms of an executive committee resolution, you know, that responsibility to work, assist departments to align their service delivery boundaries with municipal boundaries. So it is not a legislative mandate, but it is what was resolved, and then we are assisting them. But in the Department of Justice, we are working with them there. In the process, you know, we have been given an update. There has been a lull because we just started about 3 years ago, but we are told now that they are picking up on that one. So we're doing it with COCTA, you know, but it is a sticky point in terms of the service delivery, you know, and but as the chairperson said, it's something that we focus on even with the current process, when we actually even look at sub places and ensure that we do not deliberately divide people that belong, you know, in terms of traditional leaders and areas. We really focus on that one, right? We try. And then in terms of, which is why then it is not included in our vision. And then in terms of a capacity development for the various houses, we raised this with the Department of Traditional Affairs, you know, both at national and provincial level, you know, that, you know, we are willing to assist them to understand so that they may train traditional leaders, because they do have the budget, they do have the people. All they need to do is to, you know, organize workshops, and then we'll be there, you know, and we organize them. So
we have actually, we are hoping that they will soon catch up with that one because they have not really gotten into it, but we have indicated to them that we are willing and are ready to assist them. Hopefully the Costa National, the town part of it will take it up because we've raised it with them as well. In terms of the breakdown, training someone, you know, you know, to understand what we are doing as a board, you know, in the houses and the municipal level. Number one, with the municipalities, that is one of the things that we've asked, is that they've got to have units, not necessarily appoint new people, but rather assign people, you know, to the demarcation process, so that we may train them, so that they may actually see this as a continuing and a continuous process. But now what they do is they only focus on it during time of election, and which doesn't help us. We have requested that also of them individually as we went along, and we are hoping that it is something that if Nsarga, unfortunately, no longer here, you know, would actually raise and actually ensure that they do, because we really need that. With capacity assessments, the chairperson has indicated, you know, the methodology, but just to add, what happened also was that we got departments involved in the process. We had a steering committee which included members of the first one. We had treasury, we had land affairs, we had you know, environmental affairs, we had COCTA, we had SALGA, you know, in the steering committee. And then we ensure that the work that they do is incorporated, so much that it is an integrated report. It is actually a very good report that also reflects on even the latest Auditor General's report. It has got a component that reflects on that and puts it in, and so that you can actually see what the audit outcome is and the capacity that we also as the working board have assessed and reflected on. It's a very good report, and also it has got an in-depth analysis at district level, you know, of one district per the province, you know, to kind of look at the issues. It's a very good report. It's a report that we are really very proud of. Mm-hmm. A report that will be used now. It is a one-stop information portal, you know, for, you know, our data in, at municipal level, which we hope the municipalities are going to use to improve on their own operations and on their own leadership. We actually have something that also focuses on leadership, because it's one thing that is not is difficult to assess, but that we said that it also needs to be looked at. Because we find that sometimes, for example, we have MM, you know, having post-grad qualifications mostly, and then at engineering departments, you do not have the people with the skills, you know. But then now, what is it, you know, the other issue then is leadership overall, both at administrative and executive level, something that needs to be looked at. But if we were to organize a session to make a full presentation on the capacity assessment report, you know, we'd really be willing to do that. The consultation down to locals, honorable members, is something that we really want to do. For example, in case, and we tried very much with some of our partners with the IEC, for example, we went to locals, you know, in terms of the current process that we're doing. You know, with the limitations of being part-time also, you know, you go to this one and not be able to go to the other, but we tried to cover as much as possible, and we realized that it is actually a process that is one thing. We really do need to actually have it, you know, throughout the country. But again, as has been raised here, you know, with only one full-time board member, and the capacity that we have and the budget that is being cut, we won't be able to do what we would love to do. But what we have realized and what we pride ourselves in also is the more we have consulted, the more people have kind of gotten to understand the demarcation process. You know, because people have been having questions without understanding what we're doing and how we're doing it. And now we're engaging them. We're ensuring that actually the applications and the proposals come from them. Starting from the ward delimitation process, now people are getting to understand their municipal areas better, and also the boundaries and how they impact on the people, you know, when you engage with them. And now with the redetermination of boundaries, it's the first time that the board has actually come out proactively. And it has actually turned out a lot of proposals, because people are beginning to understand that, oh, this is what is happening here and this is how we can change it.
Mm.
It's a process that is really important to the development of our country. And we hope that this committee will assist us to ensure that we've got a good machinery that will enable us to achieve what we would love to achieve. I think I will end there. Certainly, constituency offices are also, we would like to engage in that. In Sisonke district, there was one member of parliament who was there when we actually engaged, and it helped her, to understand the things, and we're also grateful to see that at least there's also a constituency member and a member of parliament who actually sees what we're doing and how we arrive at the decisions that we take. Thank you very much.
Would you like to comment very briefly on the audit outcomes? I think on the irregular expenditure, as the presentation has clearly articulated, this exercise of revealing the irregular expenditure was the exercise of the board itself. In other words,
before maybe you respond, do you want to come in and follow up from the deputy chair?
I think I
will
wait for the responses to finish.
Oh.
In other words, we were the board, under the oversight of the board, this exercise was carried out. And in other words, the Auditor General came and basically affirmed the exercise which the board has already undertaken, because we were concerned ourselves as to whether we are indeed in compliance with the PPFMA. PPF Act and so on and so forth. And therefore, it's very important to highlight that this is an irregular expenditure, not fruitless. It's not a wasteful expenditure. It's not an unauthorized expenditure. In that, it's an expenditure which was incurred by the board and to be able to deliver on the mandate of the board. Therefore, there's no financial loss to the board. Goods were delivered, service was rendered, and technically speaking, this is an expenditure which really, made the board discharge its mandate. And what makes it regular is that there were no SDB forms, SDB 4s and 9s, which were by and large because of the inadequate handover process. From the old CFO to a new CFO, and the gaps that we had in the timing, and so on and so forth. But this, because we also championed this exercise, we have actually subsequently implemented preventative measures and detective measures. SDB 4 forms are the forms that get completed on each and every bid above 30,000, where the bidder will disclose that I do not have interest in the organizations, and where you disclose all the directors and so on and so forth. And each and every bid that gets completed out there supposed to have these four firms completed. And if the absence of it will make it irregular, hence the Auditor General is raising the issue of non-declaration of interest by the bidders, precisely because these forms are not there, and they were completed when the bids were advertised, but because of files were missing, because of the handover process, which we have indeed.
What are the goods and services that they?
In respect of, I'll give a breakdown. I think one from, if my memory serves me well, one of it was the round table on the metro, which was hosted in Beechwood, where the overstayed Beechwood did not complete
necessary documents and so on and so forth. I think a lot of it comes from there, but we'll give a breakdown in respect of this. So, and I think I should cover it properly now. Thank you very much.
I think you can provide it.
Yes, we will definitely do that.
If maybe you're done with some responses, I'll then, if we want to conclude by thanking the presentation and also agreeing with the proposal of saying we must have another session which maybe will specify from other issues that emanated from the annual report, which we will arrange when preparing our program. Also thank for your time and to arrive early in the morning to have to listen to other stakeholders, of which Salga has taken most of our time. But next time, I promise, Sherin, you must arrange that we start with CRL all the time when meeting stakeholders there at the end. Next time we start with CRL, MTP, lastly with this 30 minutes with Salga. Nkosi, you want to come in?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe it's just an appeal to MDB if they could send us in writing what their integrated approach system is as they envision it. And the reason I'm asking this, maybe I can make an example with the census we've just had. What comes out of that census, which talks to the Municipal Demarcation Board per ward now, that has been has had census. If let's take what 20 where I'm from in KSD municipality, how many households are in that ward, and what statistics came out of the findings of census? And I think if MDB is able to integrate itself with some of the other operators, we are then able to make this really a meaning. Full campaign to ensure that each and every area that is demarcated, we are able to get proper data that is centered around that. And I think it would assist us also as a portfolio committee to bring other stakeholders that when they go into these territories, whatever studies they come out with, they should be able to share them with the MDB. Technology, you know, assists us to achieve a lot of things. You can go in now into the website of the MDB and say what 20 and get all that information. And so if we are able to integrate our systems, then we are able to achieve that. So if we could just look at something of that nature. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair. I'll leave my question for the next meeting.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Maybe let me just confirm that capacity assessment report. CEO, and I wonder if we've got extra copies maybe to leave with them on the capacity assessment report. I wonder if we could just give it to them. Just wondering that by the time they finish it, they would have disappeared. they can't leave their chairs, but thanks very much.
Yeah, that we can go through in the meantime.
No, thanks. Chairperson, sir, you can start coming to come forward. Oh, my body.
Liquid balancing the
No, one more. I expect the word so nicely. One more. No, it's not there. No. Daddy, it's not the democracy. I don't know what it means to be about. some kind of recommendation that they may like stretch it further than just municipalities. Because it's only municipalities, there's not other people members of the board. This is Marathon, yo.
We've got 30 minutes flat because there's another portfolio committee outside.
Chairman, I propose that we continue with our meeting. But don't estimate. Next time you must have, and you know. If you're having, we have to take long.
No, but what time will we?
Even booking, your booking, you must book it
to 3 o'clock.
If you make a booking, you must book the venue for the whole day. This thing. Look now, there's another people wanting to come in.
They're outside.
Members, I propose that we continue.
Thank you, Chairperson, and members of the portfolio committee, and thank you that you are there to just give us an ear, and just to say that we took account of most of the questions that happened last time, and but what most of the questions I think are being answered in the present report that you have in front of you. I will not read the whole foreword, but suffice it just to say that we are now quite happy with the governance that is now entailing in our commission. It is said that we have lost one commissioner through death, and he's a commissioner who was taken from the Muslim faith, who was a commissioner from the Muslim faith, even if he represented the whole commission. He passed away just when we were reporting, and the only difficulty was that I think we told the minister, who because he had been appointed by the late minister, who's fellow secretary. So we thought maybe that was the only place we need to report to. But at the last plenary, we heard that we should also have reported this to the chairperson of the portfolio committee and to the president. And so we asked for condonement that we didn't do this, but we'll then have to do it in writing. We have also one commissioner who has actually, who had resigned because he was going to be
an assistant, or not an assistant, rather an advisor to the Minister of COGTA. Again, erroneously, I thought it, because he had written the letter to me, I then responded to say we didn't think there was a conflict of interest. But plenary was saying that should have been sent to the president, and the president should have made that decision. So these are some of the things. And then the governance issues are going very well, and with the money that we received, we're beginning to be alive. And I could just say that at the last plenary, we agreed on Section 22 committees to have much more oversight. Because of the lack of funds, they would have an hour or two with their department. Now, Section 22 committees are committees that are looking at the work of the departments and the programs. We have three main programs that are on service delivery. That is the program on PEA, that public education and advocacy, which is a program that is educating people on issues. This is the program that deals with issues of witchcraft, ugutwala, and so forth, that does those things. We also have the program on ICR, which is investigation and conflict resolution. This is the one that has quite a number of cases that come to it, and that it is a program that actually tries to do mediation so that people before, I think the genius of the CRL Commission is that people have no money, people whose graves are being dug and so forth, do not have money to go to court. And so they go to us, and we've had one or two several good successes in terms of stopping people from desecrating people's graves. There is one pending right now which we have to attend to. So ICR tries to meet our people halfway in such a way that they do not have to go to court. If things become difficult, ICR reverts to equality courts. So this is one way in which Section 22s are making sure about service delivery. We also have community engagement. This is the one where, according to our legislation, there should be community councils. These are the cornerstones. These are the bricks of the CRL Commission. They would be made up of either cultural, either religious, or either linguistic communities. Of note is, for instance, Afrikaans or Afrikaner Bond or whatever. These are some of the people who take advantage of the community council. But you have a number. You would have, for instance, traditional doctors who form a council and so forth. Chairperson, it is my pleasure to say that before I forget research and policy development. Research and policy development, which is RPD, is the one that actually researches as to what is it that needs to be done. It is the one that goes into communities to do the actual research about things, to research and find out what the result is going to be. I just want to say it is with great pleasure to announce here that at last we are going to have our mandatory National Consultative Conference, NCC. We should have had it first 2 years when we came in, but financial constraints and scheduling did not work. Now, at last, we're going to have that, and we would be sure that we are going to invite the chairperson and the portfolio committee. It is going to be on the 14th to the 17th of February 2013. This is the one that checks as to what the commission has been doing and gives a direction in terms of what is the next thing. For instance, you may be aware that we have been dealing with Rastafarian issues. This had come from the previous National Consultative Conference. And then we've also been having hearings on holy days and public holidays. So these have been what we've been trying to do at the present moment. So my foreword here, Jefferson, it's something that can be read. I don't think I need to go into detail with it unless there's other things that maybe you would like to know. I would like, at this stage, Jefferson, to give over to the CEO.
You may come in, Bob.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Thanks, Chairperson of the Steering Commission and members of the Portfolio Committee. I've just made a few slides when I was there, because we intended to present the whole report, but realizing that it's quite huge, we decided to just summarize it. You probably may not have what is projected there on the board. And Madam Chair, I'm going to focus on the finances of the Commission, the performance information / the HR personnel, the audit findings, the achievements and challenges, the 5-year turnaround strategy, the noteworthy matters which the chairperson has already alluded to, the governance issue, and the strategy plan for this financial year. Just to talk to the our annual report.
CEO, I know we've been unfair to you in terms of time. I think now there's another committee which is waiting outside. We didn't know. I thought maybe we'll take like yesterday for the whole day. But they're saying at 2 o'clock they want to come in. If we can try and summarize, maybe 5 to 2 we finish.
Jefferson, could I just suggest therefore that maybe he highlights what he really thinks is very important for him?
Or maybe, members, if you can move to my office to just get finished, because they've wasted their budget to travel over here.
Madam Chair, the slide, I think, is only 3 slides. So, yeah, it's only 3 slides, then the rest of the information are contained in the report. Yes. The Commission requested 51 million for the year under review, and we were given 22 million, and we have expended 22,859,000, and the variance was 28 million. Around 29 million. That's what we had as a commission, and we had our work audited by the auditors for the under review, and we have received unqualified report with some matters of emphasis. Some of them include performance information. I can just briefly indicate to you, Madam Chair, that for the past years we have been having the adverse opinion on performance information. For the first time that our performance information has improved, and though it is a matter of emphasis because we didn't get it unqualified, so we working hard on to improve further on the performance information, and also it was one matter that was found was our asset management was not up to scratch. The reason being that one of our staff members who was in charge of managing the assets resigned right in the middle of the year, and for us to get that person filled again took us some time, and we had also an irregular expenditure of 300,000. This irregular expenditure was caused by the fact that we should have disclosed what we call conflict of interest. On our applications for these finances, meaning the submissions. It wasn't because of the problem with the service provider or anywhere else. Inside, we should have, the auditors just requested that on our submissions, we must indicate that I don't have interest with this service provider. That's what it cost us, the 300,000. But I'm happy to announce, Madam Chair, that this is a big improvement. Hence, you are aware that last year, or the previous year we had a regular expenditure of around 2 million. We have improved. And then we have a wasteful expenditure there of less than 2,000 rands. This was caused by one of our vehicles that was the disc of the vehicle, and the two vehicles that had their disc expired. So as against what we had the previous year, I think it was around, if I'm correct, 90,000 or 61,000. So we need to say that, Madam Chair. And on our performance, Chair, Madam Chair, I need to indicate that we had 121 targets as a commission, and out of 121 targets, we were able to achieve 71% of those targets. So we only lost 29% of that. That was due to the fact that we didn't have enough human resources. But we are actually dealing with that. Hence, we are aware that the commission has been given extra cash of 11 million for this financial year. We're no longer having a serious problems with finances. And our 5-year turnaround strategy, Madam Chair, includes, among others, as indicated there, this is just to ensure that all these things, challenges that we have are addressed. One of them is to increase the pace of service delivery and to promote social cohesion, tolerance, and nation building, effective and efficient community council, developing, as you know, that we have been having a problem with visibility and accessibility. Recently, you might have heard, Madam Chair, on the media, on the radios, that the commission is gaining its strength once more. And we are improving on that. Also, we are looking at the question of aligning the skills of the staff at the commission and programs also to handle more complaints that we receive from the communities, or to align ourselves with the federal government priorities and implement the national consultative conference that is going to take place from the 14th to the 17th of February next year. This is one of our mandatory tasks to fulfill. It's a big event, and also to achieve not only an unqualified report, also without matters of emphasis. Also, Madam Chair, I need to indicate that we also intend to amend the Civil Rights Commission Act. Hence, it has got some loopholes, and that's it, Madam Chair.
Although they got the good unqualified reports, but you look at the Auditor General's at page 43, it's quite disappointing in the report of audits, especially from the leadership level. And the county officers are not adequately exercising oversight responsibility regarding financial and performance reporting and compliance. Financial performance management did not prepare regular, accurate, and complete financial performance reports. Management did not review and monitor compliance with laws and regulations. And that is serious, Mark. The leadership is not going to follow through the gap. And, you know, you're going to waver. There's going to be problems. I hope they've rectified it and steps are taken to make sure these things that oversight is done properly. Thank you.
Just quick one, Chair. There's the lost commissioner by death and one has resigned. Have they been reappointed? Has there been anyone to fill those positions? And then on page 11, there's the Mvezo case of relocation of graves, and that the CRL had an advisory role there. But I believe from the Mvezo Traditional Council, they are still awaiting the CRL Commission to come and engage with the community and inform them as to what ought to be done
and what is the process on that? We've not yet seen the commission in the community. What is their role then on that, and as to when will that be attended to, since I see it in their report here? The issue of irregular expenditure, 300,000, what was it spent on? Can we get a more detailed input, maybe in writing? And the wasteful expenditure, 2,000, what did we do with it? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to be very quickly. I think mine follows on Honourable Bonham's input, where the Auditor General speaks about, oh, I've lost the page, the management, assets, liability management, internal controls. He gives an opinion on all of that. So I think, Chairperson, I'm not going to ask for an answer, but we can ask, yes, page, it's page 42, 43 on the Auditor General's report. If they can give us the plans that they have to address these issues, the action plan of addressing the concerns of the Auditor General and the time frames as well. Yes.
I think I won't pose any questions, but the justice that I'll do, I'll propose that then, because I'm interested also to hear from your presentation emanating from your last presentation on the cases that you've been intervened, you want even the interpretation of those cases, like that one of language in schools, discrimination, denial of access, all those, and the process of you to intervene in culture issues, Botswana, and the like. I think maybe we would want to hear progress and the response from the public and the participation. With whom you interact with communities. I'll ask you, I don't know whether I'm crippling you to your budget constraint, that we will reprogram, then we'll have a large session with more time, so that we'll also engage on that one, because we remember at that time you were still grappling on issues, but when seeing the annual report now, there has more things that have been done. So it will give us even an opportunity to go through your annual report. When coming back, we interact each other. Chairperson, want to come in?
Chairperson, I just wanted to say that which we presented last time is our roadmap that produces
yes.
Yes. And so it will be looking at this is the performance thing that the auditors were looking at, mm-hmm. Once you could have time to go through this, you will discover exactly what you said in terms of 29% that failed to come in. But it's no problem. I think the only thing is that maybe we might just ask for some bit of assistance when it comes to the finances.
It won't, unless we go to your offices like we did before.
Oversight.
Yeah, we're doing oversight, then we'll come to your offices and final our thing. Member, I think you are comfortable. You're not feeling that you are not treated well. I sincerely apologize about the thing of time. I thought this venue is booked for the whole day. That's why we are relaxed. And now the other committee members are standing outside here.
Chairperson, I think when you do come, you shall have gone through our report.
Okay.
And I think you will discover that most of the things you wanted to know about, you may just only want to know details which we did not include in, because it will be too thick a report. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Chairperson, we just take note of what has been asked in terms of management, and to say that please would like to say we will look into that. That is why I say Section 22 companies, Section 22 committees are now going to meet full time, unlike before.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sure that's what I'm going to do.